ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the List Talk 20s podcast. I'm your host, Tanner, and I'm with my lovely I'm with my guest, Jacob, today. You guys probably, if you are literally a day one, would recognize Jacob's beautiful voice. But if you did not, it's probably because Jacob was previously on episode 4, which was over 2 years ago, and that was before we even had a video version of the podcast. So a few updates, a few technical improvements, if you will, since you've been last on, man. But you've been listening. You've been a day one fan. You're one of the people that have always reached out to me and told me you love the episodes, love the content. And I just want to say, I appreciate that. And it's crazy how it's been over 2 years since you were last on.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's I've enjoyed listening to your show. And thanks for having me on again. It's an honor, a privilege, especially now with all the new platform you have and everything. Oh. That, you know, it's a little intimidating, but, you know, I got my water with me.
Oh, good.
Power through.
Is it actually water?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I thought it was straight earlier. Water. It wasn't earlier, but, you know, it's water. It's 8 o'clock at night, you know. So.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, Jacob, I just want to say once again, thank you for listening. And for those who don't know Jacob, Jacob, how about you? You kind of talk about your and I's relationship, how long we've known each other first off.
So we met freshman year of high school. So that was 2013. Holy cow. I'm 11 years. But we met in high school in the marching band. And, you know, just kind of ran from there. I wouldn't say we were consistently talking and hanging out with one another all 4 years of high school, but we stayed in touch for sure. And we were close. And even after high school, going into college, we would catch up. We'd call each other on the phone every now and then, which was fantastic. And you were able to come to my wedding a couple years ago, almost 3 years ago now, which is crazy to think about. It'll be 3 years in November. So, but yeah, once again, I'm glad you're able to make it. And I'm glad we've stayed in touch all these years. It's pretty cool.
It has been pretty cool. Especially just being one of those people that you can call after not talking for a few months and catch up and all is well. And yeah, crazy to think of all the life obstacles / accomplishments that we've had and the 11 years of knowing each other. And the topic for today, the broad term is happiness. You mentioned a book to me that you read that was kind of diving into this topic and a few aspects about happiness. And I'm sure we can discuss about that. But we're just going to kind of talk about happiness, man, and just see where the conversation goes. But do you actually want to mention a book before we begin, what the book is, who it's by, and what it's about?
Yeah, absolutely. So the book is called Build the Life You Want, and I had a double take because the author, his name is Arthur C. Brooks. He co-wrote it with Oprah Winfrey. He writes a weekly column called How to Build a Life. So it's easy to get those mixed up, but Build the Life You Want is the title of the book. Co-wrote it with Oprah this past year, and it's been a bestseller since it came out. The reason why it's so good is not only is he a scientist in the field of happiness, he gives practical advice on how to become happier, and he emphasizes that. It's a journey towards becoming happier, increasing your happiness, not necessarily achieving happiness. There's a difference. A lot of people think, you know, when they see people that they believe to be truly happy, they think that they've reached that destination. Ultimately, happiness is not a destination. It is a journey, and it's an adventure, as he calls it. But it's a fantastic book. I highly recommend it to anybody out there who's interested in boosting their happiness or figuring out how they can, you know, techniques they can use in their day-to-day lives on how to become happier, how to become happier persons in general. It's a fantastic book. And Oprah is, as you probably know, she's excellent in her own self. I mean, she gives a lot of great advice in the book as well. So it's a great book.
I kind of want to talk about the book a little bit more. There's a few things, or themes, I should say, that author C. Brooks kind of dives into. And the first one's kind of talking about the four pillars of happiness and the four things that he believes that people should focus on in terms of their happiness and overarching aspects. So the four pillars were family, friends, faith, and work. And I know that pretty much covers a lot of the things that can cause happiness or dissatisfaction on a complete other side of things. But my question for you is, which one of those four pillars have you worked on the most for yourself within the last few years?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's a big part of his book, talking about the four pillars. And he emphasizes how that's based on his research and the science that he's looked into, that's generally the four main categories in which happy people, or people who are happier in general, they've achieved success in those four areas. It is fascinating. But to answer your question, to be honest, I mean, over the past few years, I put a lot of effort into my professional development with my job and getting to the point where I need to be with work. And that's just kind of where I've been and the path of life that I took and the place where I'm at right now. But that was a good journey, and it was successful. I got where I wanted to be. And now, to be honest with you, I'm kind of looking forward to putting more of an effort into other pillars, specifically maybe reaching out to friends who I haven't talked to in a while, or reaching out to friends who I want to talk to more frequently. Meaningful friendships are important, and he emphasizes that in the book a lot. So I want to put a lot more effort into that. I feel very happy with my family life, which is great. I've been married almost 3 years, as I mentioned now, which is fantastic. And I'm very confident in my faith. So I want to work on friendship, but to answer your question, work has definitely been up there for me. What would you say has been the point of emphasis for you as far as those pillars are concerned?
That's a really interesting question. I guess it depends on what, I don't know, I feel like each year I am prioritizing a different area of my life. I wish I could say I'm balancing everything at once or trying to adjust and work on all aspects of myself simultaneously, but I've come to realize that overall, if I kind of focus on one part of my life and really try to improve myself in that area, that is better for my physical, mental health, whatever it is, my relationships, for example. That's more beneficial than me trying to micromanage all these different parts of myself. And so it's varied year to year. When I first went into college and throughout college, I think the biggest emphasis for me obviously was friends, making new friends, but also family. And the new aspect of me not being in a home anymore and not under the roof of my parents, and how my relationship with my family, such as my parents and sister, did change. I think something I've talked about, especially within the last year on the podcast, is my faith, how I'm still seeking and trying to improve my faith. But that is definitely something where, especially in comparison to you, and you really are a role model with your faith and how you carry yourself with your faith in Christianity and everything. I admire and love that aspect about you. And I think that's something that I can improve on and need to improve on, I should say. But I think that's it. Yeah. Work.
Well, I will say this. Sorry to interrupt you there. I mean, no. I wouldn't beat yourself up over the faith thing. And Arthur Brooks talks about this in his book, in his podcast. You can look up his name on the podcast app on Apple and find tons of them. He emphasizes this over and over again. You can be an atheist and have a transcendental belief, right? The point of him putting faith on that list of the four pillars is to zoom out, as he says, to make yourself smaller and recognize something bigger than yourself, which kind of goes into the conversation of humility as well, which is another big thing. He talks about humility being a huge factor in becoming happier, but you know, you could research and become very enthusiastic about the Greek philosophers or anything that's bigger than yourself. If astrology is what makes you happy, what really makes you interested, kind of like what he talks about in this quiz that we talked about earlier, that we took, how interested you are. You know, if you're interested in astrology and Greek philosophy and any of these things that zoom you out, it's a big deal for him. That's what he talks a lot about. So I wouldn't worry so much about looking into a traditional faith if that is not what works for you, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a great point to add. I definitely think that Christianity is what works for me and has worked for me growing up. I definitely like your perspective on how it is just looking at something larger than yourself. And I really like you discussing humility. Do you think that humility is something that you've worked on within the last few years that has indirectly kind of helped your happiness at all?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. When I started reading Arthur Brooks' stuff, and even before that, humility was something that I was trying to build in myself. Humility, and he talks about this, the definition of humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less often, which is kind of interesting to think about. And
I like that, Jacob.
I know. And that struck me. That's not my line. That's his, or at least whoever he quoted before me. But yeah. It's very interesting. But when you put it to practice and you actually take time to think of others more before you think of yourself. It is surprising how you see a difference in your happiness level, because ultimately, when we see the fruits of caring for and thinking of others first, and them recognizing that, being happy that you're asking questions about their lives and what they're going through, that in turn comes back and makes you happy to know that you're helping somebody else possibly just by asking how somebody's day was, you know. And there's another line that I quoted from this book here, because, you know, that goes into another branch, which is just as incredible. But, you know, he talks about the four pillars, which are basically guidelines to becoming happier just in general. But he has a number of other different examples, you know. And one of them is to stop caring what people think of you, you know. And he tied it back to the humility aspect by, and I quote from page 85 of his book here. Remember, the goal here is to focus on others, but not on their opinion of you, which is also very interesting. But to go back to the humility, I mean, it's just, it really does help. When you zoom out, you think of others first. It takes everything off of you. He talks about the psychodrama, as he calls it. He says, when everything's about you and you're thinking all about yourself all the time, it's always my work, my commute, my lunch, my problems at work, my stresses, my sandwich that I eat for lunch. It's exhausting, as he talks about. And he says, if you can put the focus on others as opposed to thinking about yourself constantly, it's very interesting.
That is very interesting. I really like that aspect of kind of being a servant to others and how that can indirectly bring happiness for yourself. You know, there's times where we may feel like we are the most happy on the inside, and then you may realize that someone that is right next to you, someone down the street from you, someone you see passing by in your work, etc., is not as happy as you. And then honestly, when I see those kind of situations, that honestly affects my happiness, my internal happiness. So I think part of such as doing things like this podcast and serving others or trying to improve other people's happiness for me is such an important trait for me, because I want to make sure everyone around me is as happy and satisfied in life as I'm trying to achieve on a daily basis. So I know you agree with that. What is something else about happiness that you've learned over the last few years, or even just in general? It doesn't have to be fairly recently, but what is something about happiness that you have learned that you really didn't think about until that situation came about, or until that thought popped into your head?
You know, another thing that I've learned here, and you kind of touched on it just now, is the serving others, the giving back. And I love that you're using this platform you have with this podcast to give back, to talk about things that people, particularly in their 20s, have to go through as they're going from the college life to starting a job and young adult, eventually into late 20s and the 30s. I think that's great. The thing he emphasizes, Arthur Brooks emphasizes on the four pillars of happiness with work, is work that serves other people. And it's interesting how much happier you can become by giving back, by being charitable. You don't have to be charitable financially. You can be charitable with your time. And that's a big thing that I've tried to work the last couple of years, is volunteering my time with the church recently. Past couple of years, I've been able to work on a committee with my church that partners directly with a church and a community down in Haiti. And as you know, the economy in Haiti, the conditions, living conditions that they have to endure, it's a constant struggle for them. And our church is able to fund them and help them financially, which is great. But there's a lot of moving parts. And I've been very thankful to be able to join in that committee and help in any way that I can. So giving back has been very good. Was there anything that you've learned? Just, I know that since we decided to do this podcast, I brought this book up to you and you hadn't heard of it before, but has there been anything that you've learned recently about happiness that surprised you, or something you didn't know before?
This might be a hot take. Well, there's two things. The first one might be a hot take. I think something that I have done in the past is always seeking happiness, always trying to find happiness. And for some people, that might be the right approach. But for me, I've come to realize that happiness is not something you seek. Happiness is something that comes to you. And it can come to you in ways that you may not think. It may come to you in ways indirectly from what you were expecting. And so my opinion, I've been trying to stop seeking happiness and trying to artificially feel happy. I want to naturally feel happy. You know, if I'm feeling a certain emotion that is the opposite of happiness, whether it's guilt or anxiety or anything like that, I feel what I feel. I let my feelings come naturally and they go as they are. And I think that's the same thing with happiness, because I felt like then my happiness that I was feeling was more genuine. It was more lasting instead of a temporary fix. So that's my hot take. And I'll ask you after I say my second thing, if you agree or disagree with that. And then the second thing about happiness is something I've talked about over and over on the podcast, is how, you know, there's 8 billion people here and we're all living life for the first time. And I think that if you really think of that in an empathetic way, or just that statement in general, even to people that you don't agree with, even to people that you actually despise in your past, yeah, their morals may not align with yours. And yes, you may not agree with everything that they do through their actions or words. But at the end of the day, you know, everyone's experiencing life for the first time, and their view of happiness and what makes them happy may be completely different than your own. It's very easy to try to push your happiness onto someone else. And I've kind of realized that once again, you can't do that. Happiness is not something that you seek. It's something that comes to you. So I don't know if those two examples kind of made sense there, but those are my two answers.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that point about how everybody's living life for the first time. And it's true. And it's always been true, but you don't think about it in that way, which is very interesting. You were mentioning how when you feel anxious or disappointed, any of those negative emotions, they come to you and then you just let them play out, and they come as they may. I believe that's how you pointed it out. And that's a good way to approach it. Ultimately, becoming happier doesn't mean that you're void of the negative emotions. The negative emotions actually are there to protect us, which is something that Arthur points out in his book, how if we didn't have the emotion of fear, which is one of the largest negative emotions, we wouldn't have the internal instinct to run away from a tiger that's charging at you in the savannah, right? So ultimately, we wouldn't get anywhere as a human population. We'd probably be eliminated. But it is interesting to think about, though, because we need those negative emotions to realize how happy we can become and how happy we can be in different parts of our life. We may struggle in one year, and the next year, it can be completely different. We'll remember how hard we struggled the year prior and how great it feels right now. And we can appreciate that and not take it for granted, which is a good thing. And that does, in my opinion, I think that makes you happy. And then you can realize that, you know, hey, I had a struggle last year. It's bound to happen again. I'm bound to feel disappointed again. What comes up must go back down. I think that's a good approach to take toward it. And, you know, kind of on that note, I was going to ask you this question and I kind of touched on it earlier, because it's a common misconception that Arthur Brooks talks about a lot, which I didn't understand at first either, is like, what is happiness? Like, what, in your opinion, what is your definition of happiness? It's a loaded question, you know, answer it as you may. Go ahead.
I don't know if I can answer that question. I just don't know what approach to go at it. Happiness to me, I think happiness is just the feeling of feeling content, in my opinion, because I feel like there's a difference between people trying to be happy and always be jovial, always be at the top. They expect life to be 100%. And then there's other people's versions of happiness where you are content, you're satisfied, all is well. But there's checks and balances in life. You know, life is a roller coaster. And if you are content and you're satisfied, I feel like that's happiness, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a great response.
No, it's not. It's dog shit.
It is a great response. No, give yourself some credit here. Come on, man. It's a great response. I mean, it's interesting because before I read this book, before I kind of got into this, because I would say over the past year, I really came to discover this science and this endeavor towards becoming a happier person. And Arthur Brooks was kind of a guy that I found, and I really liked what he had to say. And I just kept reading and listening to what he had to say. But he's actually a professor at the Harvard Business School, and he teaches an entrepreneurial class, if I'm not mistaken, but he also teaches a class on happiness specifically, which is constantly on a wait list. I believe the wait list, you have to wait at least one or two semesters to get off the wait list and get into his class, which is incredible. But he asks this question on the first day of every class, and he asks what people's definition of happiness is, and most people respond with, it's a feeling. And that's what I would have responded with before as well. But he very emphatically says that happiness is not a feeling. It's more of a direction. It's more of a way of doing things in your life, a way of conducting yourself to make yourself and others around you happier, which is very interesting. And he talks about the process of doing that. He gives practical advice, which is great. He talks about how, for him specifically, a routine works for him. I mean, he says he gets up at like 4 to 5 every morning. He does 60 minutes of hard weights and working out. And then he's Catholic, so he goes to a mass every morning with his wife. And then he comes back, and then, and only then, he'll drink his coffee, okay? Because he found out with the science of caffeine that if you drink coffee after having a couple hours to have woken up, and you drink a cup of coffee and then you go and do your work, then you'll have about 2 to 3 hours of optimum work output or whatever you may do professionally. So he's kind of a science nut in that sense. I can't get up at 4 every morning. I can't do that every morning. My schedule doesn't allow that. But routine works for him. He talks about how emotional self-management is huge. He does kind of boil it down to macronutrients, 3 macronutrients. I think, like, as human beings, we need proteins, carbohydrates, and fat. I think that's what it is, like, generally. Yes. And I'm sure you probably know that better than I do.
You're right. There you go, Jacob.
But he talks about how, just like we need those 3 things as human beings, in order to achieve happiness, generally we need enjoyment, satisfaction, and purpose in our lives, which is very interesting. You know, so like his definition of happiness is, it's not a feeling, it's a direction that kind of guides you towards enjoyment, satisfaction, and purpose. 3 things.
I'm gonna stop you right there.
Yeah, I know that's a lot. So
you're gonna come to my podcast. You're going to ask me a question where you already knew the answer to, just to tell me, hey, you're wrong.
No.
I love it. No, I love it.
I said I was wrong too, right? I said I was wrong too.
No, that's – I like that trick question, Jacob. You got me. I think I did talk about satisfaction, though. So I touched one – give me 1/3 credit.
You did.
I failed, but I got 33%.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm not going to respond to this one. I'm not going to – counter your answer here, bro.
No, please.
What in your opinion is satisfaction?
You son of a bitch. You son of a bitch.
There you go. That wasn't on the list of questions, was it?
No. Satisfaction. In terms of satisfaction as a definition, I would just say it's kind of, I don't fucking know, man. I don't know.
That's
it's kind of like substituting for happiness in a way for me, because I said it's about satisfaction and feeling content. And I feel like that's kind of the way with satisfaction as well. I think satisfaction is a state of being. Being satisfied is a state of mind. But I don't know about whatever answer you're about to tell me that Dr. Brooks has for us here.
Yeah, I mean, that was a perfect answer on your part right there. Dividing between satisfaction and being satisfied. Damn, like, that's a good answer right there. I don't know if I can top that. But
no, go ahead. You have to.
I don't know. In my opinion, I think being satisfied is just going through a hardship and coming out on top, right? Granted, we don't always come out on top, and we know that. There's going to be things that kind of get us down, and we might have to find our way around it. But being satisfied, I think what he's trying to get at there is that you go through things in life, and when you overcome them and overcome challenges, the satisfaction you receive of overcoming that obstacle, the character that you built through that challenge on the other side, that's a huge part of satisfaction. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but that's kind of...
No, I completely agree with that. And to kind of build off of that, we've kind of talked about the definition of happiness, satisfaction, and also trying to overcome obstacles. What is something that you are unhappy about yourself in the past that you have worked on to now feel better about yourself with? Is there a quality about yourself that you've grown to be displeased with as well, as a part 2 to that question?
Oh, great questions. To answer the first question, and when I was on the 4th podcast of yours over 2 years ago, I was talking about the training that I went through for my job and how tough that was, and how, you know, it was just very stressful. and I didn't feel like I handled it as well as I could have. And so kind of looking back on that, I want to handle adversity better. I want to take those hits as they come and kind of absorb them better, but still continue, you know, because that's, we all go through hard things in life, and but we have to continue to, we have to continue to provide, right? We have to go to work. We got to provide for our families. We got to continue to work towards those things. So that's kind of what I'm working towards. To answer your second question, is there something I'm displeased with? That was your second question, right?
Yeah.
Something I'm displeased with. Yeah, I mean, with how busy I've been with work over the past 2 years, I feel like, you know, I haven't had as much time, or I haven't made as much time to contact friends, to reach out and maintain those friendships. And I know I'm probably beating myself up over it because I'm kind of a perfectionist, kind of want to do things better than I probably should, or what's expected of me. Where there's the average, I'm trying to be greater than that. That's not generally healthy sometimes. So, you know, I want to reach out to friends. I'm going to touch base with them, because at the end of the day, you know, jobs come and go. They do. One way or another, we find a way to provide, to support ourselves. The friends are very important, meaningful friendships. So it's kind of something that I'm working on. I'm getting better at, but I was displeased with it a year or so ago.
Good answers.
You know, it's
honest,
just,
answers.
It's one of those things, man. It's like, it's tough. And I'm sure you know, with how busy you've been with your school. I mean, it's hard to manage all those different things. But that's okay. It's just part of the journey of continuing to grow. And, you know, we're still pretty young. I mean, how old are you? 25? Yeah, so am I. 25. You'll be 26 this year. It's crazy to think about, because, like, everything we've already accomplished, all the things we've gone through, we were really kind of doing it behind the curve, you know, at a disadvantage. I don't know how you feel about that, but that's kind of how I look at it.
No, I mean, I agree with you, especially since I've known you for so long, and just kind of how we grew into ourselves, you know, when we were, 14 years old, when your freshman year in high school, 14, 15.
Mm-hmm.
And man, we had no idea what the hell we were doing. And then we became seniors, and we thought that our shit didn't stink. We're like, okay, we're seniors in high school. We kind of know what we're doing. We go to college, and man, we are back to square one. We do not know what we're doing. Then you graduate college, man, I know what I'm doing. I'm seeing, like, you know, I'm graduating. Then you graduate, you're like, shit, I don't know anything about the real world. How do I work and balance everything? I think for you to say you're balancing everything in life, I think they're, no, I'm just going to say it. If you are saying that you are able to balance everything at the same time, I think you're kind of lying to yourself in a way. I think there's way too many aspects within one's life to say that you're giving 110% effort to everything. And I think that's a beautiful part that we've talked about just in personal lives, on the phone, et cetera. And I've talked about on this podcast is how you're constantly improving and developing yourself. And there will always be something to improve on. And there will always be something that you're dissatisfied with or unhappy with about yourself. And you're trying to fix that, improve that, or better yourself. And I think that's the important part about happiness, and something we haven't even touched on yet, is how it's a continuous thing. It's a fluctuating thing. It's not going to be a linear line. It's not something that you wake up and you have the same amount of happiness as you would when you put your head on your pillow at night. And I think that's something that people can really focus on the day to day, and then they forget the year to year. You know what I mean? It's like if you're on a huge graph and you just see a line go straight up, overall linear lines from 2024, January 2024 to December 2024. Straight line. Holy shit, he got happier throughout the year. That is crazy. Zoom in month by month. There's some fluctuations, up and downs in a graph. Zoom in more. Look at the individual days. And you'll see overall over the year, I had a lot of self-improvement. My happiness was overall significantly better. I became a better person. Tanner 2025 is a better version. But then you zoom in, you can see all the individual day-to-day hardships, the day-to-day emotions. And I think that's something that people lose sight on with happiness, Jacob. And I would really like to talk about that part of it with you. Is how do you manage to not hyper-focus on the now? Obviously, you have to conclude the day, right? You have to focus on the now. Maybe that's poorly worded. How do you not hyper-focus on the now? And how are you able to reflect and open up the broad scope of your happiness, of your improvement, and realize that you are actually doing okay and you are actually trying.
And I love the points you made about the graph and the linear progression. It's like the stock market, right? Since 1999, it's gone up.
Speaking of, not a great time right now.
Not a great time right now. Today was rough, but that's interesting. But to answer your question, I mean, I don't know. I feel like a lot of us, especially in our 20s, right? When we're young adults, we're going through college, we're trying to make a living at the same time because that's tough. And then you get out of college, you get your degree or whatever. And maybe you didn't go to college. Maybe you went to trade school. Maybe you just started a job right out of high school. Whatever it may be, it's a rat race, right? It's a constant race on the treadmill. And it feels like you're going nowhere sometimes.
Yes.
Which is basically like what running on a treadmill is. Or what it feels like sometimes. And the way I kind of think about it is like if you take a road trip, there's some people on the interstate who are going 95 miles an hour on a 70, right? Or on a 75. Yeah. And they're trying to get that little inch of space everywhere they can. Even in dead stop traffic, they might be trying to weave in and out of people. And the attitude of that person is probably more in tune with going as fast as you can at the expense of your happiness, right? At the expense of stopping to make sure that you're taking care of yourself. And at that point, you really are truly micromanaging every small little moment, right? And you're not zooming out, okay? As opposed to taking that road trip, enjoying the back roads that take you to the interstate, right? Because those back roads, they're a little windy, right? They can be a little windy.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah,
you see where I'm going with this? What I'm saying is that to get to where we're trying to go or where we think we're trying to go, it can be difficult. And it's easy to get disappointed with yourself. It's easy to look at every little turn and say, failed at that. But, you know, 2-3 years down the line, you're going to look back. You're not even going to think about that turn, you know? And so to answer your question, I just feel like I'm trying to look at every aspect of life, especially the hard ones now, and try to find some source of happiness wherever I can, right? There's going to be times when it's tough. There's going to be times when, for example, I mean, you're going to have to study a lot. There's going to be times when you don't want to study, but you're going to have to. There's going to be times when we got to go to work. We don't want to, but we got to power through those moments. But what I'm trying to do is trying to zoom out enough to find a source of happiness, even in the little minute details, the small moments when it doesn't seem like I'm making progress. But I mean, that's a great question. I mean, I don't know if you feel that way. I don't know if it's like, let me ask you this, like you're working hard right now to get through school, right? And you know, you're putting the hours in the textbooks, you're getting there. Have you thought about what it's going to be like when you get on the other side, when you walk, graduate, get your diploma, when you get your job? Let's say you're what are you anticipating? 26, 27 years old by the time that happens?
Old as shit. 27.
Okay. Let's say you work till 65.
Oh my
almost
God.
40 years. It's almost 40 years, right?
That's terrible.
For me, they forced me to retire at 65. Sorry, window popped up. So it's like, you know, I worked hard to get where I'm at. I'm very happy to be where I'm at. But when I started working the job, and I'm out of training, and I passed all my tests, I'm working, and I'm like, man, I got 40 years of this.
Yeah.
I've only lived 24, you know, 25.
Yeah.
So my question for you is, like, have you thought about that? Like, have you thought about in the grand scheme of things, the struggles that you're going through right now, do they really, you know, maybe they do matter. Maybe they do feel, or maybe they are just as big as they feel to you right now. I mean, what's your take on that?
I want to look back and think about how 3 years ago, I was very unsure of what I would be doing, where I would be. The thought of grad school, actually my counselors and two of my professors said with my GPA and how things are that I would never have a chance of getting into a PT school. And then I remember moving up here to the Ohio area, deciding, you know what, I'm going to still try to pursue grad school, and got one job that was PT related, two jobs that was PT related. Applied to PT schools, got in, blah, blah. Everyone knows the story. So here I am now starting my second year of grad school and just being very present and appreciating the grind, appreciating the work I'm doing now. In the moment, it sucks, but it's fun now because I'm with all my classmates studying together and spending long days together. And you know, in a year or two, once I graduate, I'll miss this part of my life before I have to work a 9 to 5 or whatever the hours are. But to answer your question, I am ready and I am excited for work in the next 40 plus years. And I think it's just what you make out of it. I'm blessed with my occupation that I can honestly work in a wide variety of settings, whether it's hospitals, you know, traditional orthopedics, a professional sports team, pediatrics. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So God forbid a setting is not for me. It's very commonplace for PTs to kind of bounce around different settings until they actually find one that's their calling. And I won't really know that until I experience that, right? So there's a reason why I have to do all my clinicals next year and everything and all these different settings to kind of get a feel of what I may or may not like. But I think for me, I've tried really hard to not think about that far ahead and just really try to focus on the now, because I think it's very easy for me, my mind, it very much so goes into the rabbit hole and thinking way too deep about, am I doing enough now for my future self 5, 10, 20, 40 years from now? And then that becomes just overwhelming. And I always tell myself, no, I'm not. So I've tried to push that side of myself away, really focus on the now and understand that, yeah, the next 40 years, I'm going to be doing this occupation, but take it day by day, year by year. And, you know, I mean, shit, time is flying by right now. I'll be honest, 40 years sounds like a lot, but in the grand scheme of things, I know we're going to be 65 and we're going to be chatting on the phone and we're going to be talking about, hey, do you remember when we were in our mid 20s and we thought that we were going to be, you know, anticipating the day to retire so much? Like, no, time is flying by.
I agree.
Especially for you, because, you know, you're in an airplane and
I see what you did there. That's the first time I've heard that one.
Yeah, I'm sure. Fuck you. Yeah. Hey, nice shirt, by the way. Of course, you'd be on the podcast with a Celtics shirt.
Yeah, go Celtics. Go Celtics. It's a good summer. But yeah, no, I think that's a great way to look at it. I think it's good to look at the now and the present. Kind of keeps you focused. And, you know, looking at the now and the present, it can be, you know, easy to zone in on one area that you weren't satisfied with, right? Something, maybe you failed a test, maybe you had a bad day at work, and that's okay. But if you can try to make room in each day, each moment to think about what grounds you, right? Think about your faith, think about your family, your friends, you know, and if you're at work, you're thinking about how you're serving other people. If you can try to zone back into those things, hone back into those things, that's what I try to do in my day to day. But, you know, to kind of go back to the macronutrients that we were talking about earlier, because I think that's a key to, you know, managing each moment as it comes. We talked about satisfaction and how that plays a role in our happiness. There's purpose, or otherwise known as meaning. Do you think that there's a grand purpose to your life? That could be a yes or no question. Is there, you know, there's like the cliche destiny term, you know, like, do we all have a purpose? Is it predetermined for us, or do we make our destiny? You know, like, do you feel like you have a purpose? And if so, if you want to share that, you know, what do you think that is?
I think my purpose is just to be loved and give love to those that matter to me. I think it's something I mentioned earlier in this episode, and I think I've said it before in the podcast, is that all this materialistic stuff, yes, I would love to have a great job, be known as the greatest physical therapist of all time, have a $1 million house and have everything square in my life. But the things that I will be thinking about on my deathbed, or things that I will take to me into heaven, into the next life, is the relationships I made and just the life experiences I had. And I just want to feel like at the end of the day that I did everything I can to make the people that matter to me, for them to know how much I love them and to show them that I love them and to continue to have those relationships. Because I think that's all it is at the end of the day. You know, we're all interconnected in some way or shape or form. And I think God purposely places people into your life for better or for worse, for lessons, for obstacles for you to overcome. Life lessons is very important. But for the people that stay in your life and for the people that matter, I think that's the only thing at the end of the day that truly matters and the most meaningful part of life. So I think that's my purpose. And not saying this is the solution, But I think this is an example of me trying to make others feel loved and feel like they're noticed in some shape or form, or feel like that they aren't going through something alone. And I think that's something that's really important that every person should feel. And I feel like that's my calling at the end of the day. PT is serving people, making them feel important and valued, and that their life matters. We're trying to get them back to good quality of function of life, you know, physically, cognitively, et cetera. So I think that's another kind of way and way I'm attracted to that profession. Yeah, I think that's it in a broad sense. What about you?
Very well said. Very well said. I really admire you for that. I really do.
Thanks, man.
Take it. That's really neat. And it's nice to know there's people out there like you who genuinely care for others like that. And
Jacob, stop. Come on. Come on now.
Turn it red over there.
I'm blushing a little bit, okay? I'm blushing a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's important. It's important to serve others. I mean, not to take your answer, but really that's kind of what I've always felt is the purpose in my life, is to take care of others. You know, whether it's my family, whether it's the people I serve when I'm working, I think that's all very important, is to take care of others, serve others, take care of yourself as well. If you have a job where you can work to serve other people in your day-to-day, there's nothing better than that. There really is. I mean, when I'm at work, I'm very focused on each individual flight. And, you know, and in the back of my head, I know that there's all those people back there. And they're going to see family. I mean, I had a passenger recently who got on with her family going to a funeral, you know. And there's just so many different ways that you're serving other people through your work. And it doesn't matter what work you're doing. It can be anything. You're serving others. That is the design of our economy, right? Ultimately, we work to earn our daily bread, support ourselves, but ultimately we're helping others support themselves as well, which in the general grand scheme of things, it's a constant cycle, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's beautiful. I think there's a real beauty to that that we don't think about, because we get caught up in, I mean, it's easy for me to get caught up in the psychodrama I was telling you about. My job, my commute, my alarm that the next morning, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But one other thing I was going to ask you is, you know, we talk about how, you know, we're serving other people in our work, thinking of others, what our purpose is. Are there any practical techniques that you employ in your day-to-day, or maybe techniques that you want to start using in your daily life to designed to increase your happiness? Do you have any of those techniques you want to share, or anything that works for you?
I think where I am in my stage of life, just because my focus right now is school plus my relationship with Cameron and family, all the usual stuff, but I'm not necessarily working a 9-to-5. I think the big things for me, because of it being school and all the assignments and tests that are coming up, I'm very objective based, right? So if I have a weekly checklist of things that I know are going on that week, and as the week progresses and I check everything off of that list, or almost check everything off of that list, to me, that brings happiness to know that I accomplished everything that I needed to. And I just feel satisfied with myself. I feel happy about myself. And then something else I do is at the end of the week, no matter how easy or difficult the week was, always giving myself some kind of reward and letting myself, you know, give myself a little pat on the back for overcoming whatever obstacles occurred that week. Because I think it's very easy to get caught up with what's going on, and you're always on the go, and you're going, and you're going, and you're going, and the days turn into weeks, and then you haven't done anything for yourself, you haven't rewarded yourself for simply just going through what you're experiencing. And I notice when I've neglected that, and I haven't really given myself the self-love that I need or deserve, or my body wants. Sorry, I paused. That sounded weird. If I don't give myself the self-love, you know, the encouragement that I need to keep on going, then overall, my morale is going to decrease. Things I would like to implement, and I was doing for a little while, man, meditation, granted, I was just learning. I don't want to even act like I knew how to meditate, but just trying that, even if it's just simply breathing and relaxing at the end of the night before I go to bed. I think something I've noticed is trying to take away the tension before I lay down to bed. I feel like that just carries over into the next day, and I just don't feel so rested. So whatever you have to do to kind of unwind and relax before the night's end, you deserve that and you need that. I'm trying to think what else, Jacob. I wish I could say I have more technical things that I would like to do. But I think for now, I'm just trying to get back into the meditation and make sure that I feel relaxed and that there's no tension or stress leading into the sleep for the night. But I don't know if that answered your question.
That does answer my question. That was a great answer. Now, I like the meditation. I think it's very important to try to empty your mind before you go to bed, right? And that's easier said than done, especially after a hard day. You can find yourself tossing and turning. You know, 30 minutes turns into 1 hour, hour and a half turns into 2 hours. Then you start thinking about it, right?
Yep.
You can't turn your brain off, and that's hard. So I really like that technique. I've never really tried the meditation. That sounds like something would be nice. One thing that I've always done, and this works for me with my faith, Catholic. You know, it's the most important thing of my life is my faith. And so I try to, sometimes I forget. Sometimes I'm just so exhausted. And all I can think about is putting my head on that pillow and closing my eyes. But recently I've been able to do this every night is just say a quick prayer and just say it in my head. Close my eyes even and say it in my head with the lights out. It's quiet. There's nothing else going on, right? And you can really take that time to turn everything off, I try to focus on all the things I'm thankful for and make that prayer. Pray for others. Pray for my family. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm on the road, I'll pray for my wife's safety, my family's safety. Thinking of others, it does help me to fall asleep. It does calm me down quite a bit. But another thing that I've been trying to do, and it's worked really well for me lately, is just trying to make that time every day to work out and exercise. And that's been huge for me. Even on some of the busiest days, I've really tried to find that time where I can just do nothing but just go to the gym, get my cardio in, get my weights in, set that time aside and let nothing get in the way of it, right? Granted, I mean, there's some things that might have priority, but generally, if you can make that time for yourself, like I've found that I've made time for myself each day, it generally helps. It really does. I find a boost in my happiness every day that I work out. I feel that serotonin, you know? I'm just like, I almost feel like a serotonin junkie. It's like, whoa. It's ridiculous. I'm like, I'm doing the protein shakes after a run and a workout. I'm trying to get more protein in my diet because I just feel the effect physically and the physical effect of it is really boosting the mental. The mental is benefiting from it too, which is really cool. I'm just really enjoying that part of my life right now. So I'm just going to try to keep doing that. Try to keep working, exercising. If it's not exercise one day, maybe it's just time to sit down with a book and then just read a little bit, even if it's just for 10 or 20 minutes. I think that's kind of a technique that I've been going for recently. But yeah, I love the meditation thing that you brought up. That's a really great point.
Well, I mean, I shouldn't even be talking about it. I haven't done it in probably at least 2 months, but I now that I'm talking about it, I should probably try to do it again. But I don't know. Things come and go. Habits come and go. I try some things. I'm like, oh, this is great. And then
stuff happens. Man.
Stuff happens.
That's the adventure. That's the adventure. Constantly it is. Just taking those things as they come.
That's right. Well, Jacob, before we go, I just wanted you to, if there's any closing thoughts about the book, about this topic, happiness itself, anything else that you want to discuss, maybe even the last snippet of advice you want to give to the audience before we call it a day. And take your time. You don't need to answer off the top of your dome. I can cut it out. So
I'm no expert on happiness. It's just something that I've come into over the past year, come to discover is that there really is a science to happiness. I've had some difficulties just with adjusting to this new work that I have over the past couple of years. It's been great. I love my job, and there's been times where it's been hard. You know, before I didn't really have, it's almost like a guideline, like a set of guidelines to go by when, like, if you just read this book, you will be able to go into each day thereafter in your work, your family, relationships, your friendships, everything with a whole new perspective. And that's kind of what I've come to discover is that no matter how hard things might be, how difficult things might be, how stressful things might be day to day, if you can just kind of zoom out, I think that's the big thing to take away is just being able to zoom out, think of yourself less, try to work on humility. It's interesting how becoming happy, working on your own happiness, often means working on the happiness of others. You know, what you mentioned earlier, by loving others, right? Loving others. I think there, I don't know who it was, but there was a paper written, I think it was associated with Harvard, but basically the main thesis of that paper was that loving others is happiness, that love is happiness, and vice versa. I think that's a great way to wrap it up here, because if we can just care for others more, ultimately you'll see it come back around to you. And you know, if we can just complete that circle more as a society, as a human race, I think a lot of people would be happier just in general.
Love it. I'm not even going to add anything. I think there's a lot of different things we discussed within this episode. And happiness is such a broad term. I mean, we are barely scratching the surface on this thing. We could talk about this for hours and hours. But Build the Life You Want by, what was it, Arthur C. Brooks, correct? And Oprah Winfrey?
Arthur C. Brooks and Oprah Winfrey, yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
If anyone's interested in grabbing that book, reading it yourself. I did a little research on it prior to this episode, and obviously Jacob's read the book, and it actually has some really cool things that we discussed and much more, so if you want to give it a read. But Jacob, thank you for being on. Thank you once again for listening to all the episodes that you have up until this point, man. It's been really cool to have you as someone of support, and you reaching out saying that things are going great, and I'm glad to hear that things in your life are going great as well. And I know you're going to be on it again in the future. I just want to say thanks for hopping on.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. And I think it's really cool that you're continuing to do this podcast, serve others and help others. But thanks for having me on, man. And thanks for always being there for me. Really appreciate you.
Absolutely, brother. Always. All right, guys, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to another episode of the Let's Talk 20s podcast. I hope you have a great week. Hope you have a great rest of your week. And until the next one, peace.